Life is a gift for which we are grateful. We gather in community to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift.
As we deepen into the beauty of autumn, the trees offer their annual lesson. Even on a dreary day, we are gifted with the radiance of red and orange and gold. First, the magnificent display, and then the easy release. The leaves have already begun to fall. It seems so graceful, like the most natural thing in the world. What if we could follow their example? How are we being called to practice letting go? Come, let us worship together.
There was a potter who loved to make pots. But one day, while making the pots, he prayed, and in the prayer, and a beam of light appeared, Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva said, "Mr. Potter, because of your great devotion, I will grant you whatever wish that you desire." Now, some people would think of immortality, great wealth, great riches. But all that the potter really wanted was to make perfect pots. Pots that would not crack, that would not break. And so the Shiva granted the wish to the potter, and the potter began to make clay pots. And the pots were perfect in every way. And word spread throughout the kingdom that the potter was making pots that wouldn't crack, that wouldn't break. And so before long, other potters were out of business, because who wants to buy a pot that's cracked? But before long, the potter's business went away, because no one needed to buy a pot anymore, since they were perfect. And so the potter was quite troubled and once again prayed to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva answered the potter and came to him again and said, "What's wrong, Mr. Potter? Are you not happy with the wish that I granted you?" And he said, "No, I made a great mistake. I realize that nothing is meant to be perfect. I wish to take back the wish that you granted me." And so, you can help right there. And so, Lord Shiva undid the wish, and the potter still began to make pots. But this time, he knew that nothing was perfect or needed to be perfect.
To lead us into a time of silence and meditation and prayer this morning, words from Shanti Deva, who was an 8th century Indian Buddhist monk. He's among the most renowned figures in the branch of Buddhism called Mahayana Buddhism. And his text, The Way of the Bodhisattva, has been described by the Dalai Lama as the primary source in Tibetan Buddhist literature on the cultivation of altruism and the spirit of awakening. These are the words of Shanti Deva. "All that I possess and use is like the fleeting vision of a dream. It fades into the realms of memory, and fading will be seen no more." We live in a time of incomparable choice. On any given day, so many opportunities could be chosen. So too for a Sunday morning, what shall we do with this time? We have chosen, instead of the newspaper and the hike in the woods and the breakfast with family and the Sunday morning television shows or the homework or the schoolwork, instead of the many other tasks that we could be choosing, we have chosen to be here. We have chosen to be here in hopes that we might find something in this moment of Sabbath, that we might find rest, connection, inspiration. May we find here what we seek, so that when we return to our day and the week ahead, our choosing can be wise, grounded in our deepest knowing, grounded in our own internal wisdom, so that we can choose for the good and live the lives we long to live. May it be so, and amen.
I was touched by Justin's story 2 weeks ago about the two gloves on the train. Recall that a fellow inadvertently left one glove behind as the train was about to leave the station. He immediately realized his loss and then tossed the other glove in the closing doorway so that they may be found as a pair. It occurred to me that all of our life's possessions are like those gloves. We might hope that our most cherished possessions go to family and friends who will treasure them forever. The reality is, even with our careful plans, we have no control over where our things will be in 50, 100,000 years from now. Knowing that reality and pressured by our recent need to downsize as Jean and I moved out of our comfortable home of 30 years, I have spent the last year or so looking for good homes for many of our possessions. There have been many trips to the Portage Clothing Center and Restore, as well as many donations to the church's service auction and other charity events. Some of you may recall we also had a large garage sale in May with the proceeds benefiting the UU Church of Kent. Letting go. It seems to me my life has seen several cycles of acquiring and letting go. A true hunter-gatherer, I have loved the modern incarnation of hunting and gathering, shopping. Back in the day, I loved to go to garage sales and antique auctions, and there certainly is a certain satisfaction and richness in surrounding oneself with unique treasures, not to mention nice clothing, shoes, jewelry, what have you. But now I understand you can't take it with you. I understand the actions of little old ladies who have given me over time various special treasures, saying they thought I might like to have it. For example, I can now fully appreciate a visit with Harriet Begala at the end of her life, where she surprised me with a lovely turquoise ring that she had acquired. There is a wonderful sense of freedom in letting go, knowing that you no longer have responsibility for things, and much satisfaction when you find just the right home for these items. It's hard to let go, but as a recent convert to the philosophy of Marie Kondo, I believe there is a time to let go, to say to many of your possessions, thank you for sharing my life and giving me some joy, but now it is time for you to make your own way in the world. To the gloves on the train, thank you for keeping my hands warm, and I help you find joy to whoever finds you.
We've been exploring letting go this month, letting go of the desire to try and control life, letting go of holding on to our grief and our loss. Next week, letting go of resentment. And so today, I wanted to explore two particular kinds of letting go of possessions and letting go of careers. And so I invited some members of our congregation who have retired to share with me a couple of sentences, a few thoughts about what they have lost or found or learned in retirement. And I received nearly a dozen responses from people, some quite brief, others more elaborate statements. And I have woven them together into a kind of collage, taking phrases, snippets, sentences, sometimes whole paragraphs from these statements of members of our congregation to share with us a picture, a tapestry on retirement. And I've invited some people, not necessarily those who have written, to read for us this morning. And so I invite them forward. The statements on retirement ran the gamut. Some who had an easy time in retirement and some who had a hard time and some who found that retirement was a little bit of both. And so I tried to capture that in this collage of words on retirement.
Life is life at any age. Retirement is no different. But without all those meetings, there is time to experience, to see and feel and be reconnected within our earlier selves that through the years have been relegated to the shadows because there were so many main events that crowded out those selves and demanded attention and focus.
Usually people ask, how do you like retirement? The expected answers revolve around alarm clocks, free time, and hobbies. Goodbye, multitasking. Goodbye, emails and responsibilities.
Goodbye to the stress of being responsible for part of an operation. This was a huge relief. I got healthier as my stress went down and life was good, mainly because I completely let go of my responsibilities to the company.
I let go of most of my work clothes, too. It felt especially good to get rid of all of the holiday-specific shirts.
The three-piece suit beseeched me, along with other related work clothing, for new owners.
In retirement, I had more freedom and more fun. I still see the people a few times a year, but without stress or anxiety, because it ain't my problem now. It's someone else's.
I didn't get rid of my work friendships. Some of those friendships actually became closer and richer because we can spend more quality time together, not burdened by work conversation.
However, retirement can be a struggle to give up lively mental stimulation, projects, and students and colleagues.
My losses included a huge part of my identity, too large, and a keen sense of what might have been had my workplace not been so toxic and threatened, and had I had the opportunity to make the contributions I was actually hired to make.
In my experience, I was rather unique in that I thought I should act in what I thought was the best interest of the child, and not in terms of a single test score that could make a child ineligible and essentially condemn them to constant struggling in school. I honestly felt that many kids were lucky to have me as their school psychologist. I regret that with my retirement, more kids will find school difficult, unrewarding, and make them feel like failures.
I guess I've also missed my colleagues.
I miss the people terribly.
I miss the work. Not all of it, but some of it.
I miss the money.
No money means no travel. No money means living like a college student, despite being middle-aged. No money means denial of so many things that I once took for granted. No money makes retirement very stressful sometimes when it should be the part of your life that allows you to relax. But no retirement savings means living in constant fear, and I hate that part of being retired.
Initially, I felt a need to find new activities and friends while truly missing my life of service. Being a burden to others, time became a fear. This was further compounded by suddenly accepting a chronic illness.
But being retired has given me space to think about things more holistically, with a broader, less segmented approach.
Retirement. How heavy the word seems, and seemed before I did it. What they don't tell you is that you are the same you, that retirement doesn't mean you're a different person. What I value, what I valued, I still value. You come with you in retirement.
A world of possibility is now open to me.
I walked out the door knowing that there was a large universe out there, and now I would have time to explore other interests, visit other places, have time to be a better friend, to serve more.
I began to read adult books again and joined two book groups, opening up a whole new world of literature and friendships.
I thought I'd have a hard time letting go, but that wasn't the case. I think this is because I retired to something. Grandchildren more than filled my days.
Letting go? I feel like I simultaneously let go and grabbed on to something else.
I never missed the status of my professional life, which in hindsight was frequently burdensome. Over time, I have come to find a fulfillment in a smaller life, enjoying hours of quiet, new pleasures, and the addition of grandchildren. It has been a journey of giving up with surprising gains.
Retiring seemed to enable me to reconnect with the self and selves that had been so much in hiding that it takes time for them to peer out into the light.
The letting go has created an opening, and now I clamber on to greener adventures where clothes don't matter.
I remember hearing it said that every goodbye is a rehearsal for death. A Google search tells me that observation comes from a character named Tristram Shandy in an 18th century novel by Lawrence Stern. Amazing the things that Google can tell us. The statement sounds harsh, but it also sounds true. That must be why that one line from a novel so many years ago has echoed down across time. Every goodbye is a rehearsal. Over the course of our lives, we practice saying goodbye over and over again. Often, it's really, really hard. All of us could tell about the hard, heartbreaking goodbyes we have had to say, sometimes willing, sometimes not, frequently a little of both. Life is full of bittersweet. It's tempting to try and mask the bitter, but all of our goodbyes can be our teachers. By practicing over and over again, we get to learn how to say a good goodbye, if we're willing. Our text today, the story from Cheryl, the reflections of the retired people in our congregation, these are our texts today, along with the story of the potter's wish. These texts speak to us of the necessity of learning to let go and say goodbye. There are lessons here for all of us, even those of us who are many years away from downsizing or retiring. For a good 3 years after I graduated from college, I lugged my textbooks and my papers with me, even though I moved more than half a dozen times in those 3 years. And every time I moved, I packed them up again, these papers and these books, and carried those heavy boxes to the new place and unpacked them. I feared getting rid of these things because they were symbols of me and my experience. I think it was not some kind of enlightenment about possessions, but rather the literal weight of those boxes that finally persuaded me to sell my books to a used bookstore and recycle the papers. But the lightness that followed was freeing in more ways than one. I realized on a deeper level that that chapter of my life was over. A new one had already begun, even though I was still letting go of the last one. We heard that sentiment voiced in some of the reflections on retirement. Just like possessions, our jobs can take center stage in shaping our experience and narrating our identity. If you aren't yet of retirement age, but have ever been without a job for an extended period, you know this well. Being out of work when it's not by choice can be spiritually and emotionally disorienting, not to mention financially devastating. No wonder people often cling to their jobs even when they know it's time to move on in life. I think there's a blessing in being able to choose to retire. In that circumstance, the goodbye can be like a gentle release, like the yoga we practiced a few weeks ago, gently letting go. But when a person is fired or laid off or forced into retirement, that release can be harder to make, harder to reconcile, letting go. The Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh writes, "We're often sad and suffer a lot when things change, but change and impermanence have a positive side. Thanks to impermanence, everything is possible. Life itself is possible." This seems to me the message of the story that Dave told us earlier in our service. The potter, when asked what he wanted, his one wish was to make pots that were unbreakable. But when that wish was manifest, he found only suffering. The message of the story is that impermanence is the true nature of reality. Pots must break so that new pots can be created. When we can see the miracle of impermanence, Thich Nhat Hanh explains, then our sadness and suffering will pass. If that's hard to understand the way it's phrased, substitute another word for miracle, the miracle of impermanence. Think instead of the wonder of impermanence, or the marvel of impermanence, or the gift of impermanence. Though the bitter be woven in with the sweet, literally braided together, it's possible to fathom appreciating impermanence when things unfold in the expected time and season. If a grain of corn is not impermanent, says Thich Nhat Hanh, it can never be transformed into a stalk of corn. And if the stalk were not impermanent, it could never provide us with the ear of corn that we eat. If your daughter is not impermanent, she can never grow up to be a woman. If your son is not impermanent, he can never grow up to be a man. Then your grandchildren would never manifest. When beautiful new possibilities are easy to see, letting go seems an orderly and acceptable act, even if sometimes difficult. But when the impermanence of life reveals itself in a way that feels utterly wrong, letting go can feel like a break and a betrayal. I think of the well-known Buddhist teaching tale of Kisa Gotami and the mustard seed. Kisa Gotami was a woman who had a child. She loved her child. He brought such joy into her life. And then the child died, and Kisa Gotami was stricken beside herself with grief and loss. And she carried her son around the village from person to person, all of these people who knew her begging them, "Please bring my son back to life," she asked them. And each person looked at her with regret and grief, knowing that they could do nothing to bring her son back to life. But she pleaded with them, "Please bring my son back to life." And so finally the people of the village told her, "Go see the Buddha. The Buddha can help you." So Kisa Gotami hurried over to find the Buddha. And as she spoke to him, tears streaming from her eyes, grief welling from her heart, she asked the Buddha, "Please bring my son back to life." And the Buddha said, "There is something that can help you. Go to the houses of your neighbors and find a mustard seed and bring it back to me. But the mustard seed must come from a house that has never been touched by grief, that has never known death." So Kisa hurried off, and she went to all of her neighbors and she asked them, "Please, can I have a mustard seed?" And everyone, eager to help poor Kisa in her sorrow, was glad to oblige. And so they ran to their kitchen and they came back with several mustard seeds for her. "Here, take them." And so she took them, but then she asked, "Oh, have you ever been touched by death?" And one by one, all of her neighbors told their own stories of their losses, and she had to give the mustard seeds back. So finally, Kisa returned to the Buddha, no mustard seeds in hand, and she told him, she finally understood. Her grief was real. Her losses were true. But so were all of the losses and griefs of her neighbors, her friends and family in the village. She understood this is the nature of life. What this story tells me, even in its unresolvedness, there's no taking away her sorrow. Even in the fact that Kisa had to hold her sorrow, what the story tells me is that there is hope to let it go. Impermanence is the nature of life. Always there will be others who share our experience. When the goodbyes in our life are chosen, we can look to others who have successfully navigated that passage for wisdom and inspiration. If we're trying to release possessions, Cheryl's words today might help you, someone who's navigated that path. And Cheryl, in turn, was helped by Marie Kondo, who she mentioned, who wrote the wildly popular book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. If you're anticipating retirement, you can draw insight from the voices of the people that you heard today who have crossed that bridge, or the voices of a whole host of other people who have been there, who will tell you their story in words or in writing. And if the goodbye that you are faced with is not one that you chose, one that you find hard to accept, even in that you're not alone. The story of Kisagotami reminds us that life itself is temporary. There are no promises, no guarantees. One day we might wake up and find that we have lost something or someone that is utterly precious to us. The Buddhist nun Pema Chodron says that it's not the fact of impermanence itself, or even the knowledge that all of us are eventually going to die, that is the cause of our suffering. Rather, she says, the cause of our suffering is our resistance to change. When we can completely let go and not struggle against this fundamental nature of our lives, she teaches, then we can embrace the groundlessness of our situation and relax into its dynamic quality. This is called enlightenment, or awakening to our true nature. I'm not saying that this is easy. What I am saying is that many before us have found a way to learn to release, to say good goodbyes and open up into greater freedom. The good news is that when the time comes, if we're willing to do the heart work, the soul work, we also can find our way. For all of us, may it be true.
Hello, I'm Andrew Rome. My family is donating to the Capital Campaign because this is our church. We're the kind of people who make long-term commitments to living out our values, and this church is one of the primary places we do that. My spouse and I first heard of the church when we were taking classes to become foster parents, and we're especially interested in how welcoming it is to people of all different sexualities and gender identities. When we came, it was the Sunday service that made us come back, with Melissa's preaching that would always challenge and inspire us, and Hal's powerful music. As our family grew, this church supported us and welcomed our fostered and adopted children. Now the church is central to my life, and I'm happy to serve on the board of trustees, lead the environmental justice group, occasionally lead services even, give my time in a variety of ways. But I know that my time won't pay the bills, and it can't build church buildings that will match our mission and vision. We have this amazing church now because of the work of generations before us, and I want to do my part to pass it on to the future. Now, the four of us live on a single public employee income and decide not to eat out, not to get smartphones and cable TV, not to buy new clothes, because we are intentional about our money. But we will donate 10% of our annual income to the Capital Campaign, because this church is what we want to invest in. I hope all of us can find our home in this community like my family has, and I hope we can ready our church for the next 150 years.
I've actually never let go of my college days. You can get anything you want at the Groovy Auction and Ken. You can help your congregation, it's groovy money well spent. You can bid high, you can bid low, but you can't win if you don't go. You can get anything you want at the Groovy Auction and Camp. Now here, I should be telling you about the 27 8x10 glossy photos of auction donations, Meg Milko and Deb Biggins, and how they were drafted into running this here auction. The psychiatrist they had to see in room 604, that was to assess their mental capability to run said auction. How they tried to get out of this auction business anyway, by telling the shrink that they wanted to kill. That's right, they wanted to kill. But it would take an excruciating 18 minutes and 35 seconds to tell the whole sad story. And since the minister of this fine church is growing weary of all these here announcements, pronouncements, detonations, declarations, defamations, and other windbaggery, I'm going to cut myself short and just say, you can get anything you want at the Groovy Auction in Kent. You can help your congregation. It's a groovy money well spent. You can bid high, you can bid low, but you can't win if you don't go. You can get anything you want at the Groovy Auction in Kent, except make Milko. At the Groovy Auction in Kent, except Deb Biggins in her apron. At the Groovy Auction in Kent.
Mary Oliver tells us that to live in this world, we must be willing to let it go when the time comes to let it go. If you need a reminder this day, this week, the days to come, the trees can be our teachers. So go out into the world and turn your eyes up and let them teach you. Go in peace.